14. Marcy gasped as Wayne slid into the shallow grave, flopping down square on top of her. It knocked the wind out of her again. Wayne grunted, and the gunshots stopped a moment later. Still trying to recover, Marcy stared up at the black sky and swirling mist. It took her a moment to realize that the mist was frozen in place.
"Speed bubble?" she asked.
"Yeah,"
Wayne said, then groaned, twisting to the side and putting his back to the earthen wall so he wasn't lying directly on her. His shoulder glistened with something wet.
"You've been hit."
"3 times,"
Wayne said, then winced as he turned his leg.
"No, 4.
He sighed, then took a bite of his sandwich.
"So?"
"Give me a sec," he said.
She twisted in the grave and peeked up over the earthen lip. Nearby, DeChamp fell slowly, as though through molasses, toward the ground. Blood sprang from several gunshot wounds, droplets hanging in the air. A vanishing muzzle flash from the darkness revealed the origin of the gunfire. A group of figures on the path, shadowed and nearly invisible. Bullets zipped through the mist, leaving trails.
"How'd you know?" she asked.
"They made the crickets stop," Wayne said. "DeChamp must have sold us out. I'd bet wax his hat that he sent that boy to fetch these fellows."
"The set was here first,"
Marcy said, her stomach sinking.
"Yeah."
Wayne poked at one of the holes in his shirt, wiggling it around to check that the wound had healed. With his other hand, he stuffed the last bite of sandwich into his mouth, then joined her in peeking up over the lip of the grave. Above, a lethargically moving bullet hit the invisible edge of Wayne's speed bubble. In an eye blink, it zipped across the air, barely a foot over Marcy's head, before hitting the other side where it slowed down again. She cringed belatedly. Anytime something entered a speed bubble, it was refracted, changing trajectory. While it was unlikely one would get bounced so radically that it would point downward toward them, it was possible. Beyond that, Wayne's bend alloy burned extremely quickly. He'd have to drop the bubble before too long.
"Plan?"
Marcy asked.
"Not dying."
"Anything more detailed than that?"
"Not dying today."
She gave him a pointed look. Another pair of bullets zipped overhead while, outside the speed bubble, DeChamp's body hit the ground.
"We've got to get close to them,"
Wayne said, slipping one of his dueling canes out from the loop on his belt.
"That's going to be hard," Marcy said. "I think they're scared of you."
"Yeah?"
Wayne asked, sounding encouraged.
"You really think?"
"They're unloading enough ammunition to take down a small army," Marcy said, ducking as a bullet entered the speed bubble, "and they opened fire even though DeChamp was caught in the barrage. While I doubt he meant much to them, it indicates they were scared enough that they didn't dare waste a moment to wait for him to climb back into the grave."
Wayne nodded slowly, grinning.
"How about that? I got me a reputation. I wonder..."
Marcy glanced behind them. This grave was near several others that had been left open earlier, waiting for occupants.
"Can you get your speed bubble big enough to include one of those other graves from in here?"
He followed her gaze, then rubbed his chin.
"The closest one, maybe. If I drop this bubble and move to the back of this grave before making another..."
He couldn't move a bubble once it was in place and couldn't leave its confines without it dissipating.
"So we have to get them to come check on our corpses," Marcy said, "which might be hard if they're really that scared of you."
"Nah," Wayne said. "Might actually be easy."
"How?"
"Running out of time," Wayne said. "You still got that little pop gun in your purse?"
She pulled out the small pistol.
"It has terrible range," she said, "and only 2 shots."
"Don't matter none," Wayne said. "Once I drop this, fire it at the fellows, then be ready to move."
She nodded.
"Here we go," Wayne said.
The bubble dropped. Mists leaped back into motion, swirling above, and the sudden sound of gunfire pervaded the graveyard. DeChamp twitched and he gasped, eyes going glassy in the lantern light. Marcy waited until the assailants stopped shooting, the cracks of their guns echoing in the night. Then she leveled her little gun and squeezed off 2 shots toward the shadows. She ducked back down, uncertain what that was supposed to have accomplished.
"You realize we're now trapped and unarmed, Wayne."
"Yep," he said. "But if those fellows are really bothered by my fearsome reputation..."
"What?" Marcy asked, glancing toward him as he peeked over the edge. A few cracks sounded as the dark figures fired back, but it wasn't as frantic as before. What was...
There,
Wayne said, leaping toward the back of the grave and then popping up a speed bubble.
Ha! They came prepared, they did. Good men.
Marcy risked peeking up again. She came almost face to face with a spinning piece of dynamite frozen in the air, the wick spraying sparks and smoke that mixed with the mists. She yelped, scrambling back. It was almost to the speed bubble.
Across we go, Wayne said, taking off his top hat and tossing it out of their grave toward the next one.
He scrambled after it. Marcy joined him, staying low and hoping that the attackers wouldn't notice. Wayne's speed bubble would make them blurs to the eyes of the men, but it was dark and the mists would help obscure things. She slid across and down into the other grave, which was deeper than the first. Wayne nodded to her, then dropped the bubble. Marcy pressed her back to the side of the grave, squeezed her eyes shut, plugged her ears, and counted in her head. She only reached two before an explosion shook the ground and dropped a wave of dirt into their grave.
Rusts! People must have heard that halfway across the city.
She glanced at Wayne, who took out his other dueling cane and twirled one in each hand. She heard footsteps scraping outside and imagined the shadowy attackers cautiously creeping up to check on people they'd supposedly killed.
Can you beat them on your own?
Marcy half-whispered, half-mouthed at Wayne. He grinned and mouthed back, "Does a guy with no hands got itchy balls?" He grabbed the side of the grave and hauled himself out. The mists above froze a moment later as Marcy was caught in a speed bubble, Wayne putting one up and trapping half the men nearby in it with him. She was accustomed, by now, to the sound of wood on a man's skull, but it still made her wince. The speed bubble dropped as someone managed to get a shot off, but more groaning and cursing followed. A short time later, Wayne appeared at the top of the grave, backlit by the flickering lantern in the mists. He shoved his dueling canes into their loops, then knelt and held out his hand. Marcy reached up to accept his help from the grave.
"Actually," Wayne said, not taking her hand, "I was hoping you'd hand me my hat."
"We'll send for your carriage, Lord Waxillium," said the assistant house steward. "We're terribly sorry about the unfortunate occasion of your lady's distress. You're certain she ate nothing here that might disagree with her?"
"She had only drinks," Wax said, "and a few of those at that."
The cook relaxed visibly. She towed one of the maids away by the arm as soon as she saw that Wax had noticed her. He stood in the doorway of a guest chamber, and behind him Steris lay on the bed, eyes closed. The assistant steward, an aged terrace woman in the proper robes, clicked her tongue softly, looking over her shoulder toward the vanishing cook and maid. Despite her displeasure, Wax could tell that she too was relieved to hear that the food at the party couldn't be blamed. No need for the other guests to worry. A piercing voice echoed down the hallway. Someone, a man with a high-pitched tone, was announcing the reception's speaker. Wax could hear easily. The introducer was assisted by electric amplifiers. It seemed the Tarxel girl's devices had spread even to New Saren. The assistant steward took an unconscious step back toward the ballroom.
"Feel free to go," Wax told her. "We'll wait here for a half hour or so to be certain my lady is well rested, and by then our carriage will certainly be waiting."
"If you're certain..."
"I am," Wax said. "Just see to it that we're not disturbed. Miss Harms grows most discomforted by noises when she's ill."
The steward bowed and retreated down the hallway toward the ballroom. Wax clicked the door shut, then approached the bed where Steris lay. She cracked an eye open, then glanced at the door to be sure it was closed.
"How do you feel?" Wax asked.
"Nauseated,"
Steris said, half propping herself on one elbow.
"That was a tad hasty on my part, wasn't it?"
"Haste was appreciated," Wax said, checking the wall clock. "I'll give it a few minutes to make sure the hall is clear, then duck out. I'm not certain how long Kelesina will be away, but I'll need to move quickly to learn anything."
Steris nodded.
"Do you think they might have her here? Your sister, I mean."
"Unlikely," Wax said. "But anything is possible. I'll settle for a lead of any sort."
"What's she like?"
She seemed like your average, full-of-herself noblewoman, certain that—
Not Lady Calacina, Waxilium. Your sister.
I— Wax swallowed, checking the clock. I haven't seen her in decades, Steris.
But you worked so eagerly to rescue her.
He sighed, settling down beside Steris.
She was always the bold one when we were kids. I was careful, earnest, trying so hard to figure out what to do. And Telson? She seemed to have it all in hand. Until I left the village and she stayed.
More Terrace than you, then?
Maybe. I always thought she hated the place, considering how often she found excuses to escape. Then she stayed.
He shook his head.
I never knew her, Steris. Not as I should have. I was too focused on myself. I can't help feeling that I failed everyone. Mother, father, Telson herself, by not remaining close to her when I was out in the roughs. And I'm failing them again by leaving her under my uncle's control.
Steris, still lying on the bed, squeezed his hand.
I'll find her, Wax said. I'll make it right. I ran to the roughs thinking I didn't need any of them. But as the years pass, Steris, I find I want less and less to be alone. I can't explain it, I guess. She's my family. My only family.
Outside, a new voice started talking. Introduction done, Lord Severington had begun his speech. Wax glanced at the clock, then stood.
All right. I need to go and explore while everyone else is distracted by the speech.
Steris nodded, then swung her feet over the side of the bed and took a deep breath.
You should wait here, Wax said. This could be dangerous.
Have you forgotten what I said last night? She asked.
The safest place to be is most certainly not near me, Steris, Wax said.
Regardless, you may need to escape quickly. There won't be time to come back for me. And if you're spotted, someone will wonder why you are alone. But if we're together, we can say we were just leaving and were looking for the way to our carriage.
Those were good arguments.
He reluctantly nodded, motioning for her to follow. She did so with alacrity, waiting beside the door as he opened it and peeked out. He could hear Lord Severington's voice even better.
Time to show those in Ellendale that their tyranny is not only unjust, it is against the will of the survivor, who died in the name of freedom.
The hallway was empty. Wax stepped out, Steris at his side.
Try not to look like you're sneaking, he suggested softly.
She nodded, and together they moved down a long hallway set with brass gas lamps that had been converted to electricity. According to the mansion layout he had memorized, the ballroom and these small guest quarters were in their own wing to the east. If they moved west along this hallway, took this corner... They passed under an archway into the mansion's central atrium, where a stream ran through the center of the mansion, diverted from one of the waterfalls, then cascading down a set of arranged rocks covered in chimes. Only a few lights glowed on the walls, giving the atrium a dusk-like feeling.
That humidity must be awful for the mansion's woodwork, Steris noted. What practical reason could they have to run a river through the middle of their house?
I'm sure the reasons aren't practical at all, Wax said.
Nearby, a maid passed in from another doorway. She saw him and froze. Wax glared at her, standing up straight, putting as much nobleman's sneer into his expression as he could muster. The young woman didn't challenge them, but ducked her head and scuttled away, carrying her stack of linens. They picked their way through the dim atrium. Above, broad glass windows would have given a view of the sky, but instead mist spun and swirled. Wax raised his fingers in greeting toward the distant mists, but stopped himself. Harmony watched through those mists. Harmony, the impotent. Harmony, the meaningless. He set his jaw and turned away from the windows, leading Steris along a path in the indoor garden, which was set with small rocks and plants. From his maps, he guessed that Calacina would be up on the second floor somewhere. As they followed the path northward, walking along the stream, he spotted a second-floor balcony.
Honestly, Steris muttered, how can they even know if the water is sanitary? A river running through their gardens wasn't enough. It has to go through the house itself?
Wax smiled, studying that balcony. I'm going to scout up ahead there. Speak loudly if someone confronts you. That will warn me, and I'll sneak back.
Very well, Steris said.
He dug in his pocket for a few coins, feeling old-fashioned as he burned steel and prepared to jump.
Do you want something more substantial?
Steris asked. He glanced at her, then down at her purse. They searched your purse.
That they did, she said,
then took the hem of her skirt, lifting it up to the side and revealing a small handgun strapped to her thigh.
I worried they'd do something like that, so I made other plans.
Wax grinned. I could get used to having you around, Steris. She blushed in the dim light.
I might, need your help getting the thing off.
He knelt down, realizing that she'd used approximately 7 rolls of tape to strap the gun in place. Also, being Steris, she'd worn shorts under the dress, in case she had to do what she was doing. 2 pairs, judging by the bit of cloth he saw peeking out from under the top one. Wax set to work extricating the gun.
I see you didn't want this coming off accidentally.
I kept imagining it falling out and firing, Steris said. Mid-dance.
Wax grunted, working at her thigh beneath her dress.
You realize that if this were a play, this is exactly the point where someone would walk in on us.
Lord Waxillium, Steris said. What kind of theater have you been attending?
The kind you find in the roughs, Wax said, yanking the gun free.
It proved to be one of his riotings, a .22 caliber 6-shot he kept in his gun case but rarely used. It would do. He stood up, letting Steris settle her skirt back down.
Nice work.
I tried a shotgun first, she said, blushing. You should have seen me try to walk with one of those on my leg.
Stay out of sight, if you can, he told her, then dropped a coin and launched himself toward the upper balcony.
Marcy stepped into the gravekeeper's shack, clicking the door closed behind her. Wayne looked up from breaking the legs off a chair.
Is that necessary? Marcy asked.
Dunno, he said, snapping off another one. It's fun, though. How are our toughs?
Marcy glanced out the window toward where a group of the local constables were carting away the last of the thugs. It turned out that setting off dynamite in the middle of the city was a fine way to get the attention of the authorities.
They don't know anything, she said. Hired muscle, paid and sent to do the hit. The ones who hired them mentioned your name, which turns out to have been a mistake.
Oh, I'm famous, Wayne said happily, snapping off another leg.
The hut had been thoroughly ransacked, drawers ripped out, cushions slit, furniture in shambles. Wayne looked at the chair leg he'd broken, apparently checking to see if it was hollow, then tossed it over his shoulder.
We can try to follow the payments to those men, Marcy continued, but I suspect that Suit was too careful for this to be traced, and there's no sign of the runner boy.
Wayne grunted, stomping on the floor in one section, then taking a few steps and stomping again.
The police brought an allomancer, Marcy continued, and there's no metal in that grave, so if the spike was ever there, it isn't now.
She sighed, leaning back against the wall.
Rust and ruin. I hope Waxillium is having more luck than we are.
Wayne kicked a hole in the floor with the heel of his boot. Marcy perked up, then walked over as he fished around in a compartment he'd found.
Aha!
He exclaimed.
What is it?
Marcy asked. Wayne brought out a bottle.
The champ's hidden booze stash.
That's all?
All? It's great! A fellow like that hides his booze well. Too many other workers around to swipe the stuff.
So we're at a dead end.
Well, there's an account book on the desk there that I found under a false bottom in the drawer, Wayne noted, taking a swig of the dark liquid he'd found. Lists everybody what paid the people here for a grave robbing in the last few years.
Marcy started.
When did you find that?
First, Wayne said. Hardly had to search for it. The booze, though. That they hid well. Good priorities, these folks.
Marcy stepped over some stuffing from one of the sofas and picked up the ledger. It didn't belong to DeChamp, but to the graveyard as a whole. It listed plots, what had been found in them, and to whom it had been sold.
It's so the boss of the place can keep track of what they've sold and what they haven't, Marcy thought.
and to keep track of his minions, to be certain they didn't get any ideas about making their own side business of grave robbing. Next to an entry from a few days back was a note from the manager. If anyone comes looking to investigate this plot, send to me immediately. Marcy closed the book, then fished from her pocket the paper that listed workers at the graveyard.
Come on, she said to Wayne. We have one more stop to make tonight.
Lower left quadrant of the New Ascendancy broadsheet. Drink to the health of Ellendale. Brand whiskey has been grown and distilled exclusively in the outer cities. It's not sold in Ellendale, so it never passes through the lion's den, and is therefore never taxed. It tastes better than anything central, and because it's made local, you can rest easy knowing that your coin hasn't lined any tyrant's pocket. Long live Brand. Looking for adventure? Basin Bill is looking for you. Hundreds of cities were lost at the final ascension. Magical artifacts, riches, and fame can be yours. Apply in person at Basin Bill's old-time pub and playhouse. Do your metal tools speak to you? Hello. Your neighbors probably don't want to hear about it, but we do. Visit 27 Raylan Place. Ask for K or N. Bring the talking metal with you. Potential allomancers needed to test new metal alloys. Latest scientific breakthrough has created an entirely safe method of discovering new allomantic abilities. Unlock your latent potential. Apply at Tenement 1447, Crait District, around the corner from Apprisible's animal rendering. Write scientific fantasies. B. Sabler Fills, playwright of A Hero for All Ages, shows you how. Inquire at the University of New Saren. The ghastly gondola continued. The monks of Bazcor had trained me well. Their practiced moves, designed to get a leecher close enough to touch another allomancer and drain them of their reserves. But it was the ballet lessons that enabled my jump from the platform onto the moving gondola. I landed perfectly on the small ridge surrounding the bottom of the car and managed a firm grip on the outer door handles. I was safe for the moment, but the ridge I'd landed on was only a few inches wide. If I didn't find a way inside the gondola soon, even my ballet-enhanced toe strength would fail, dropping me almost 100 feet to the city below, where rooftops glowed in the failing sun like boxings in an open purse. Ethereal light emanated from inside the car, casting the haunted man's shadow against the windows. Each burst showed him striving to ready some arcane device, presumably to provide his escape. From my satchel I retrieved the device I had stolen from him when we last grappled. Covered in strange symbols and weirdly warm to the touch, it was much heavier than it appeared, and I had no clue how to operate it. But ignorance is no match for invention. I slammed the rod of metal into the door glass, shattering it. An uncanny explosion answered me, and my Bazcor reflexes pulled me abruptly to the side as a bolt howled past. It was neither an arrow nor a bullet, but a blast of pure energy, shaped like a ghost. Its entirely too human scream made the hairs on my neck stand on end, and the frame of the broken door rusted and crumbled in the wake of its passing. What manner of man could harness the powers of the dead? If the energy had enveloped me as well, would I also have disintegrated in an instant? I breathed deep and rushed into the car. Strange mechanical devices littered the floor, and above them stood the haunted man. 15. Templeton Fig smoothed the feathers of his dead white crow. He knew for a fact that this animal was an authentic albino, not some knockoff crafted by an opportunist who had heard of his collection. By now he had seen enough dead animals bleached white to spot a fake. He had stuffed this bird himself, prize of his collection, and set it looking over its shoulder with a small strip of rabbit skin in its beak. Such a magnificent creature,
People always found it striking, as its coloring was the opposite of what they expected. Things like cats and dogs sometimes had white coloring naturally, and so his albino specimens of those weren't as spectacular. He replaced the glass dome over the crow, then stepped back and clasped his hands, looking at the white animals in a row. Frozen in death. Perfection. Only the suckling boar. Had it been moved to the side? The housekeeper had better not have decided to dust his collection again. He stepped up, twisting the glass jar that held the boar. Behind him, fire crackled in his hearth, though it wasn't particularly cold outside. He even had the window open. He liked the contrast. Warmth from the fire, a cool breeze from outside. As he was trying to get the boar just right, the door to his study creaked.
"Templeton?"
a quiet voice asked, peeking in. Destra had bags under her eyes, hair frazzled. Her nightgown seemed to have swallowed her. The woman had lost more weight. Soon she would be positively skeletal.
"Are you coming to bed?"
"Later,"
he said, looking back to his boar. There.
"When later?"
"Later."
She winced at his tone and pulled the door closed behind her. The woman should know better than to disturb him. Sleep. How could he sleep until he knew what had happened at the graveyard? One did not disappoint the men with whom he had been dealing. They asked for something to be done, and you saw it done. He would know soon. He stepped forward, moving his albino squirrel to the end of the line. Did it look better that way? He reached up and wiped the sweat from his brow, then moved the squirrel back. No, that wasn't right either. Then how was he to... His fire stopped crackling. Templeton's breath caught. He turned slowly in place, fishing in his vest pocket for his handkerchief. The fire was still there, but it was motionless. Trell's soul! What could have frozen the flames? Something thumped on his door. Templeton backed away, fingers clawing at his pocket, still seeking that handkerchief. The door thumped again, and his back hit the shelf where he kept his collection. He tried to whisper an inquiry, but he was having trouble breathing. The door burst open, and the gravedigger DeChamp, eyes staring sightlessly, blood covering his shirt, fell into the room. Templeton screamed then, scuttling away from the door, and put his back to the far wall of his small den. His fingers found the windowsill, gripping it for strength as he stared at the corpse lying in the doorway. Something tapped on his window. Templeton squeezed his eyes shut, not wanting to look. Frozen fire, a body on his floor. He was dreaming. It was a nightmare. It wasn't possible. Tap, tap, tap. He found his handkerchief finally and clutched it, his eyes squeezed shut.
"Templeton..."
The rasping voice drifted in through the window. Templeton turned slowly and faced the window. He opened his eyes. Death stood outside. Cloaked in black, Death's face was hidden beneath the hood, but two metal spikes protruded from the cowl, catching the firelight on their heads.
"I'm dead,"
Templeton whispered.
"No," Death whispered. "You die when I say. Not before."
"Oh, Harmony!"
"You are not his,"
Death whispered, standing in the darkness outside.
"You are mine."
"What do you want from me? Please!"
Templeton slumped to his knees. He forced himself to glance back toward DeChamp. Would that body rise? Would it come for him?
"You have something of mine, Templeton,"
Death whispered.
"A spike."
He raised his arms, letting the cloak shift back and expose white skin. A spike was stuck through one arm. The other arm was bare, save for a bloody hole.
"It wasn't my fault," Templeton screamed. "They insisted. I don't have it."
"Where?"
"Sent by courier,"
Templeton said.
"To Dalsing. I don't know more. Oh, please, please. They demanded I recover the spike for them. I didn't know it was yours. It was just a rusting piece of metal.
I'm innocent! I'm...
He trailed off, realizing that the fire had started crackling again. He blinked, focusing again on the window. It was empty. A dream, after all? He turned and found DeChamp's corpse still leaking blood on the floor. Templeton whimpered and huddled down. He was honestly relieved when the constables burst into the room a short time later. Wayne shucked the awful heavy cloak and held up his arm, healing his wounds. Not much left in his metal mind. He was going to have to be sparing after this. Those bullet wounds earlier had taken a lot out of him.
You didn't need to actually cut holes in your arm, Wayne, Marcy said, joining him in the garden.
He'd trampled some very nice petunias to get to the window.
Course I did, Wayne replied, wiping away the blood. You've got to be authentic.
He scratched at his head and shifted the wires that held two half-spikes hovering in front of his eyes.
Take that thing off, Marcy said. It looks ridiculous.
He didn't think so, Wayne said.
Inside the house, the constables dragged Templeton Figg away. The information in the ledger Wayne had found should be enough to see him well and truly incarcerated. Poor chap. He didn't really do anything wrong. You can't steal from a person that's already dead. But then people were strange about their stuff. Wayne had given up on trying to figure out all their little rules. He'd send the fellow some fruit in prison. Might make him feel better.
How was the accent? He asked.
Worked well enough.
I wasn't sure how Death himself would sound, you know. I figured all important-like. Like wax, when he's telling me to take my feet off the furniture. Mixed with some real old-sounding tones, like a grandfather's grandfather. And grindy, like a man what is choking to death.
In fact, Marcy said, he's quite articulate and not at all grindy. And the accent is strange, not like anything I've heard before.
Wayne grunted, taking off his head spikes.
Can you do it for me?
What, the accent?
Wayne nodded eagerly.
No, not a chance.
Well, next time you meet that guy, tell him he's got to come talk to me. I need to hear what he sounds like.
What does it matter?
I gotta hear, Wayne said, for next time.
Next time? How often do you expect you'll be imitating Death?
Wayne shrugged.
This is the fourth so far, so you can never tell.
He took the last swig of DeChamp's brandy, then slung his cloak over his shoulder, and started through the mists back toward the road.
Dulsing, Marcy said.
You know it?
It's a little farming settlement, Marcy said. Maybe 50 miles northeast of New Saren. I read about it in my textbooks. There was a landmark water rights case there. But it's isolated and tiny, barely worth anyone's time. What in the world does the set want with it?
Maybe they like their tomatoes real fresh, Wayne said. I know I do.
Marcy grew silent, obviously deep in thought, worried for some reason. Wayne left her to it, digging out his tin of gum, tapping it, then flipping it open and selecting one of the soft, powdered-covered balls to chew. So far as he was concerned, this had been a bang-up night. Dynamite, a nice brawl, free brandy, and getting to scare the piss out of someone. It was the simple things that made his life worth living. Wax had little luck with the first set of rooms he scouted. Though they supposedly belonged to Kalasina, they proved to be empty. He was tempted to ransack them for information, but decided that would take too long and would be too incriminating at the moment. Being discovered lost in a hallway was excusable. Being discovered going through a lady's desk drawers was another thing entirely. He prowled back to the atrium and checked on Steris, gave her a wave, then continued down another hallway. This one bordered the outer wall and had windows open to the mists, which streamed in with their own miniature waterfalls. Likely some servant had the duty to close those windows on a misty night, but had gotten distracted by the party. He listened at a set of doors and heard nothing other than a voice drifting in from the window, the voice of Lord Severington, still plowing through his speech in the ballroom. With the amplification devices, Wax could make out a word here and there.
Suffer the rule. New Lord Ruler. Improper taxation. Error
must end.
I will have to give that more attention, Wax thought, prowling through the hallway toward the next set of rooms. Severington was mayor of Bilming, the port city west of Ellendale. It was the only major one in the basin besides Ellendale itself, and was an industrial powerhouse. If conflict did come, they'd be spearheading it. They're spearheading it now, Wax realized as more words drifted up to him. He continued down the hallway, listening at the next set of doors. He was about to turn away when he heard a voice. There was someone inside. Wax crouched down, ear to the door, wishing he had a tin eye along to listen for him. That voice. That was his uncle. Wax pressed his ear up against the door, heedless of how he'd look to someone entering the hallway. Rusts. He couldn't make out much. A half word here and there. But it was Edworn. Another voice spoke. That was almost certainly Kelesina. The gap under the door was dark. Wax put his hand to his pocket and the handgun secreted there, then turned the door's knob and eased it open. Beyond was some kind of study, completely dark but for the thin strip of light under the door on the far side. Wax slipped inside, closed the door behind him, and scuttled through the room, stifling a curse as he smacked his arm on an end table. Heart thumping, he put his back to the wall beside the other door.
"Never mind that," his uncle was saying. His voice was muffled, as if he were speaking through a cloth or a mask or something. "Why have you interrupted me? You know the importance of my work."
"Waxillium knows about the project," Kelesina said, "and he's found one of the coins. He's acting stupid, but he knows."
"The diversions?"
"He's not biting."
"You're not trying hard enough, then," Suit said. "Kidnap one of his friends and leave a letter, purportedly from one of his old enemies. Challenge his wits. Draw him into an investigation. Waxillium cannot resist a personal grudge. It will work."
"The train robbery didn't," Kelesina said. "What of that, Suit? We wasted vital resources, important connections I had spent years cultivating on that attack. You promised that if we attacked while he was on board, he wouldn't be able to resist investigating. Yet he ignored it. Left Ironstand that same night."
Wax felt a chill as a whole set of assumptions shifted within him. The train robbery. Had it been a distraction? Intended to draw his attention away from pursuing the set?
"Recovering the device," Suit said, "was worth the risk."
"You mean the device Eirich immediately lost?" Kelesina demanded. "That one shouldn't be trusted with important missions. He's too eager. You should have let me recover the item once Waxillium was off the train."
"There was a good chance he'd take the bait," Edworn said. "I know my nephew. He's probably still itching to go after those bandits. If he's at your party instead, then you aren't doing your duty properly. I haven't time to hold your hand on this, Kelesina. I need to be off to the second site."
Wax frowned. The train hadn't been just a distraction, it seemed. But the words left him with a deeper sense of worry. He'd chased down a half dozen leads during the last year, anticipating that he was close on the heels of his uncle. How many of those had been plants? And how many of his other cases had been intentional distractions? And Ape Manton? Was he really even in New Saren? Likely not. Edworn spoke a truth. He knew Wax well. Too well for a man he'd barely seen in the last 20 years.
"Well," Suit said, "you have your chance now to recover the device as you promised you could. How is that going?"
"It wasn't in the things he checked at the party," Kelesina said. "We snuck a spy among the hotel staff, and she will search for it in his rooms. I'm telling you, Eirich..."
"Eirich was punished," Suit said. Why did his voice sound so much smaller than Kalasina's?
"That is all you need to know. Recover it for me, and other mistakes might be forgiven. It is only a matter of time before they accidentally use allomancy near it."
"And then will we see this miracle you keep promising, Suit?" she demanded. "A few more speeches like this one, and Severington will have the entirety of the basin whipped into a frenzy, completely ignoring that Ellendale has us outmanned and outgunned.
Patience, Suit said, sounding amused.
You try to be patient. They're bleeding us dry. You promised to crush that city, provide an army, and...
Patience, Suit repeated softly. Stop, Waxillium. That is your part of the bargain now. Keep him in the city. Keep him distracted.
That's not going to work, Suit, Kalasina said. He knows too much already. That damn shapeshifter must have told him...
You let it escape? Kalasina was silent. I thought, Suit said, voice growing cold, that you had disposed of the creature. You presented its spike to me, claiming the other had been destroyed.
We may have assumed too quickly.
I see, Suit said. The two did not speak for a protracted moment. Wax raised his gun beside his head, sweat trickling down his brow in the dark room. He toyed with breaking in right then. He had evidence on Kalasina in the form of the wounded Chondra and his own testimony. Several people died in that blast. Murder. But did he have enough against Edworn? Would his uncle just slip away again? Rusts, an army? They spoke of destroying Elendil. Dared he wait? If he took her in suit right now, she might break, testify against him. Footsteps. They came from the hallway outside. As they approached the door, he made a snap decision, dropping a coin, it wasn't the special one, he had that in a different pocket, and pushing. Light from the hallway poured into the room as the door opened, revealing the steward from before. She crossed the room in a rush, and blessedly did not turn on the room's lights, instead walking straight to the doorway that Wax had been listening at. She didn't look up and see Wax pressed to the ceiling above her, pushing against a coin she walked right over in her haste to knock on the door. Kalasina called for her to enter.
My lady, the steward said in an urgent tone. Burl sent me word while watching the party for Allomancers. He sensed someone using metals in this direction. Where is Waxillium?
His fiancée was sick, the steward said. We brought her to a guest room to recover.
Curious, Uncle Edworn said. And where is he now?
Wax dropped to the floor with a thump, leveling his gun at the people inside the room.
He's right here.
The steward spun, gasping. Kalasina rose from her seat, eyes wide. And Uncle Edworn... Uncle Edworn wasn't in the room. The only thing there was a boxy device on the table in front of Kalasina. 16.
Why, Waxillium, the box said, projecting his uncle's voice. So good to hear your dulcet tones. I presume your entrance was properly dramatic?
It's a telegraph for voices, Wax said, stepping forward. He kept his gun on Kalasina, who backed up to the wall of the small room. She'd gone completely pale.
Something like that, Edworn said, his voice sounding small.
The electric mechanism didn't reproduce it exactly.
How is Lady Harms? I hope her ailment was nothing too distressing.
She's fine, Wax snapped. No thanks to the fact that you tried to have us all killed on that train.
Now, Edworn said. That wasn't the point. Why, killing you was an afterthought. Tell me, did you look into the casualties on the train? One passenger killed, I believe. Who was he?
You're trying to distract me, Wax said.
Yes, I am, but that doesn't mean I'm lying. In fact, I've found that telling you the truth is a far better method in general. You should look into the dead man. You'll be impressed by what you find.
No, stay focused. Where are you? Wax demanded.
Away, Suit said, on matters of great import. I do apologize for not being able to meet you in person. I offer up Lady Kalasina as a measure of my condolences.
Kalasina can go to hell, Wax said, grabbing the box and lifting it, nearly yanking the wires in the back from the wall. Where is my sister?
So many impatient people in the world, Edworn's voice said. You really should have focused on your own city, nephew, and kept your attention on the little crimes fed to you. I've tried being reasonable. I fear I'm going to have to do something drastic.
something that will be certain to divert you.
Wax felt cold.
What are you going to do, Suit?
It's not about what I'm going to do, nephew. It's about what I'm doing.
Wax glanced toward Kalasina, who had been reaching for the pocket of her dress. She raised her hands, frightened, right as something enormous smashed into Wax. He stumbled against the table, overturning it. Wax blinked in shock. The steward. She'd grown to incredible strength, arms bulging beneath her robes, neck thick as a man's thigh. Wax cursed, raising his gun, which the steward immediately slapped from his hand. His wrist screamed in pain, and he winced, pushing on the nails in the wall to throw himself in a roll across the floor away from the steward. He came up fishing in his pocket for coins, but the steward wasn't focused on him. She grabbed Wax's gun off the floor, then turned toward Kalasina, who screamed.
Oh, no.
The shot left his ears ringing. Kalasina fell limp to the floor, blood dribbling from the hole in her forehead.
He killed her!
A voice screamed from the doorway outside. Wax spun to find the maid he'd seen earlier standing there, hands to her face.
Lord Ladarin killed our lady!
The woman ran away screaming the words over and over, although she'd obviously had a clear view of the room.
You bastard!
Wax shouted toward the box.
Now, now, the box said. That's patently false, Waxillium. You have a very clear understanding of my parentage.
The steward walked over to Kalasina, fishing at something on Kalasina's body. Then, for some reason, the steward shot the dead woman again. Either way, this gave Wax a chance to seize the box, which had fallen from the table near him.
You'd better be careful, nephew, the box said. I've told them to kill you if they can. In this case, a dead scapegoat will work as well as a living one.
Wax roared, ripping the box free of the wall and pushing it out the doorway into the next room. He brought his hand up and pushed back on the gun in the steward's hand as she tried to aim it at him. She cursed in terror. Wax turned and scrambled from the smaller room into the one beyond, where he'd first hidden from the steward. He kicked the door shut to give himself some cover, then pushed on his coin from before and leaped over a couch, soaring through the room. He scooped up the box communication device and skidded out into the hallway. A half dozen men in black coats and white gloves were advancing down the hallway toward him. They froze in place, then leveled their weapons.
Rusts!
Wax pushed on the frames of the windows and re-entered the room as the men opened fire. The inner door into the room that had held the telegraph opened, and Wax elementically shoved it back, cracking it into the steward's face.
Another way out. Servants' quarters?
Blue lines pointed all around him, and he looked for one out of place.
There.
He pushed on it, opening a hidden door in the wall which led into a small passage lit with dangling light bulbs that servants used. Still carting the telegraph box, he leaped through it as men piled into the sitting room behind him. The weaving maze of passages let him keep ahead of them, though he did have to spend a coin taking one of them out as they got too close. That drove the others back, but notably he couldn't sense any metal on their bodies. Aluminum weapons. This was one of Suit's kill squads, likely contacted and sent into action the moment Kalasina had telegraphed him. Wax burst out of the passageways into a room that he hoped would let him circle back toward the atrium. If they'd found Steris. He dashed through a conservatory, lit by several dim electric lights and lined with maps on the walls, and entered one of the hallways he'd explored earlier. Excellent. He charged toward the central atrium, but as soon as he reached the balcony's stairway down, something leaped from the shadows and blindsided him. The terrace woman, face bleeding from where the slammed door had broken her nose, growled and grabbed him around the neck. He pushed a coin up at her, but it didn't have time to gain momentum. It hit her in the chest, then stayed there as he pushed on it, trying to push her off. He strained, his vision growing dark until a fist punched the terrace woman across the face. She let go, stumbling back and shaking. Wax gasped for breath, looking up at Milan looming over him.
Rusts, she said with a deep bass voice. You did start without me.
The terrace woman came charging in again, and Wax rolled to the side, fishing for coins. He brought up his last three in a handful as the steward punched Milan across the face. Something cracked audibly, and Wax hesitated as the steward stumbled back, clutching her mangled hand, the knuckles apparently shattered, the thumb ripped almost free. Milan grinned. Her face had split where she'd been struck, revealing a gleaming metal skull underneath.
You really should be careful what you punch.
The terrace woman lurched to her feet, and Milan casually grabbed her own left forearm in her right hand and ripped it off,
revealing a long, thin metal blade attached to the arm at the stump. As the terrace woman came for her, Milan thrust the weapon through the woman's chest. The steward gasped and collapsed to her knees, then deflated like a punctured wineskin.
"Harmony, I love this body," Milan said, glancing toward Wax with a goofy grin on her face. "How did I ever consider wearing another?"
"Is that whole thing aluminum?" Wax asked.
"Yep."
"It must be worth a fortune," Wax said, standing and putting his back to the wall. The balcony was in front of him, the hallway he'd come down to his left. The kill squad would be following soon.
"Conveniently, I've had a few hundred years to save up," Milan said.
Wax pulled her to cover beside the wall with him. She was actually lighter than he had anticipated, considering that she had metal bones.
"What?"
she asked softly. Wax raised a coin, listening for footfalls. On the balcony before him, the terrace woman twitched. When he heard the footstep, he increased his weight a fraction, then spun around the corner and grabbed the first man's gun in one hand, twisting it toward the floor. It fired ineffectively, and Wax pressed his other hand against the man's chest and pushed on the coin there. The man in coin went flying back down the hallway toward his fellows, who leaped to the side. Wax was left with the aluminum gun, which he flipped in the air and caught, squeezing off four shots. The first pulled a little left, hitting the enemy in the arm, but he was able to place the next shots right in their chests. All three dropped. The fourth man groaned from the floor where Wax had pushed him.
"Damn," Milan said.
"Says the woman who just ripped half her arm off."
"It goes back on," Milan said, picking up her forearm, which she slid back over the blade.
Blood dribbled from where she'd broken the skin.
"See? Good as new."
Wax snorted, tucking the stolen aluminum gun into his waistband. "You can get out on your own?" She nodded.
"Want me to recover the guns you checked?"
"Can you?"
"Probably."
"That would be wonderful." Wax walked to the terrace woman and checked to see that she was dead, then fished in her pockets until he came up with the gun she'd used to kill Kelesina. There was something else in her pocket as well. A metal bracelet of pure gold. "A terrace woman took this off Kelesina," Wax thought, turning it over in his fingers as he remembered the moment earlier, when the murderer had knelt beside Kelesina's body. He burned steel, and his hunch proved correct. While he could sense the bracelet, the line was much thinner than it should have been. This was a metal mind, and one heavily invested with healing power.
"Was Kelesina Terrace?" "How should I know?" Milan asked.
He pocketed the bracelet and grabbed the box telegraph device, which he wanted to send to Allendale for inspection, and tossed it to Milan.
"Bring that, if you don't mind, and meet us at the hotel. Be ready to leave the city. I doubt we're staying the night."
"And you were so certain we'd be out of here without a fight."
"I never said that. I said it wouldn't get so bad that I needed Wayne. And it didn't."
"A semantic technicality."
"I'm a nobleman. Might as well learn something from my peers."
He saluted her with the small gun, then dropped off the balcony and used a coin to slow himself.
"Steris?"
She crawled from a nearby shrub.
"How did it go?"
"Poorly," Wax said, looking up toward the ceiling, then removing his dinner jacket. "I may have accidentally let them implicate us in Lady Kelesina's murder."
"Bother,"
Steris said.
"Their evidence will depend on whether they can trace the bullets back to me," Wax said, "and whether they recover any of my prints from the area. Either way, they'll be producing fake witnesses to try to make it look like I came down here specifically to assassinate Kelesina. Grab on."
Steris grabbed him with, he noted, no small amount of eagerness. She really did enjoy this part. He took the bullets from his .22 and held them in one hand, then launched off the coin below to shoot them toward the ceiling. He flung the bullets toward the skylights and pushed them in a spray to weaken a window, then raised his arm, wrapped in his jacket, over his head and crashed them through the glass and out into the swirling mists. They landed on the roof as Wax got his bearings. Out in the mists, he felt better almost immediately, and his hand, which had been smarting where the terrace woman smacked his gun away, stopped throbbing.
"Did you learn anything useful?" Steris asked.
"Not sure," Wax said. "Most of what I overheard was about a rebellion against Elendil. I know Edwin is heading somewhere important. He called it the Second Sight.
and he said something about what I think is that little cube Maracy found. He pulled her tight again, then sent them in a push upward through the mists in the direction of their hotel. She held to him tightly, but watched the lights of the city beneath with awe. He had Kelesina murdered, Wax said. I should have seen it. Should have anticipated.
At least, Steris said over the sound of the passing wind, the mists are out. They'll have trouble tracking us.
You did well tonight, Steris. Very well. Thank you.
It was engaging,
she said as he dropped them onto a rooftop. Her smile, which she let out readily, warmed him. She was proof that, despite his dislike of the politics in the basin, it had good people. Genuine people. Strikingly, he had been forced to realize something almost exactly like that about the Ruffs after first moving there. She was gorgeous. Like an uncut emerald, sitting in the middle of a pile of fakes cut to sparkle, but really just glass. Her enthusiasm balanced somewhat his concern over what had happened. Missing suit. Being implicated. Lessie would say, no. He didn't need to think of Lessie right now. He smiled back at Steris, then pulled her tighter and pushed, launching them straight up. Higher, up away from this district. The city's taller buildings were visible only as lines of light in the night, pointing upward through the mists. He launched up off a rooftop, then past a shaking gondola moving by electricity and carrying a group of gawking passengers. It rocked as Wax launched them sideways from it toward the skyscrapers. Two were near enough one another, and with a quick series of furious pushes, he was able to throw himself and Steris up through the swirling mists in a succession of arcs, first one way, then the other. He crested the tops and pushed off one, sending them up a little farther. He had hoped that with the elevation of this highest terrace of the city... Yes. They burst from the mists into a realm seen by very few. The Ascendance Field, Coinshots called it. The top of the mists at night. White stretched in all directions, churning like an ocean's surface, bathed in starlight. Steris gasped, and Wax managed to hold them in place by pushing against the tips of the two skyscrapers below. Without a third, he wasn't certain how long he could balance, but for the moment, they remained steady.
So beautiful,
Steris said, clinging to him. Thank you again, Wax said to her. I still can't believe you snuck a gun into the party.
It's only appropriate, Steris said, that you would make a smuggler out of me.
Just as you try to make a gentleman out of me.
You're already a gentleman,
Steris said. Wax looked down at her as she held to him while trying to stare in every direction at once. He suddenly found something burning in him, like a metal. A protectiveness for this woman in his arms, so full of logic and yet so full of wonder at the same time. And a powerful affection. So he let himself kiss her. She was surprised by it, but melted into the embrace. They started to drift sideways and arc downward as he lost his balance on his anchors, but he held on to the kiss, letting them slip back down into the churning mists. Wayne put his feet up on the table in their hotel suite, a new book open in front of him. He'd picked it up earlier when poking through the city.
You ought to read this thing, Mara,
he called to Maracy, who paced back and forth behind his couch.
Strangest thing you ever heard. These blokes, they build this ship, right? Only it's meant to go up. Uses a big explosion or some such to send it to the stars. These other blokes steal it, right? And there's seven of them, all convicts. They go looking for plunder, but end up on this star what has no...
How can you read? Maracy asked, still pacing.
Well, I'm not right sure, Wayne said. By all accounts, I should be dumber than a sackful of noodles.
I mean, aren't you nervous? Maracy asked.
Why should I be?
Something could go wrong.
Nah, Wayne said. I'm not along. Wax can only get into so much trouble without me to...
Something hit the window, causing Maracy to jump. Wayne turned to see Wax clinging to one of the window sills, Steris tucked under one arm like a sack of potatoes. Well, a sack of potatoes that had a very nice rack, anyway. Wax pulled open the window, set Steris inside, then swung himself in. Wayne popped a peanut into his mouth.
How'd it go?
Hey,
Wax said. He had lost his dinner jacket somewhere, and blood, hopefully not his own, covered one arm of his shirt. His cravat drooped, half-tied.
We figured out where Suit and his people are likely holed up, Wayne said, as Maracy ran over to check on her sister, who looked flustered but alive and such.
You're kidding, Wax said.
Nope,
Wayne said, then grinned and popped a peanut.
What'd you find?
Clues about Maracy's cube, Wax said, pulling off his cravat. And something about a building project and a potential army. Suit's timetable seems to be more advanced than I'd thought.
Cheery, Wayne said. So?
Wax sighed, then pulled out his billfold and tossed a note at Wayne.
You win.
You had a bet? Maracy demanded. Friendly wager, Wayne said, making the note disappear. Can I bring these peanuts when we go?
Go, Maracy said, standing up. Wayne thumbed toward Wax, who had pulled out his travel bag.
We're leaving. Maracy, Steris, I'd suggest packing lightly. You have about 15 minutes.
I'm already packed, Steris said, standing up.
Maracy looked from him to her, seeming baffled.
What did you do at that party?
Hopefully, Wax said, not start a war. But I can't say for certain.
Maracy groaned.
You let him do this,
she accused Steris. Steris blushed. Wayne always found that expression odd from her, seeing as how she had the emotions of a rock and all. What followed was an energetic bout of motion as Wax and Maracy both ran to pack things. Wayne sidled up to Steris and popped a peanut in his mouth.
You got that preparing your bags early thing from me, didn't you?
Well, yes, actually.
What will you trade me for it, then? Wayne said. Gotta have a good trade when you take stuff.
I'll think about it, Steris said.
15 minutes later, the four of them piled into a carriage driven by Milan in her male body. A bedraggled Aunt Jin stood on the doorstep of her hotel watching them. She held a wad of cash in her hand, a wad that included the money Wayne had won off Wax. He'd left it as a tip, on account of him putting his boots on the furniture. A furiously loud set of bells sounded in the distance, and it drew closer.
"Is that the constables?"
Aunt Jin asked, sounding horrified.
"Afraid so," Wax said, pulling the door closed.
The carriage lurched into motion, and Steris leaned out the window, waving farewell to the poor innkeeper.
"Framed for murder," Steris called to her. It's on page 17 of the list I gave you. Try not to let them harass our servants too much when they arrive.
A few hours later, Wax stepped up to a cliff in the darkness and let the mists enfold him. He missed darkness. It was never dark in the city, not as it had been in the roughs. Electric lights were only exacerbating the issue. Everything glowing, casting away the darkness, and with it stillness, silence, solitude. A man found himself when he was alone. You only had one person to chat with, one person to blame. He fished in his mist coat pocket and was surprised to find a cigar. He thought he was out of these, good stout Tingmars, brought down from weathering. He cut this one with his belt knife, then lit it with a match. He savored it, drawing in the smoke, holding it, then puffing it out to churn in the mists. A little bit of him to mix with harmony. May he choke on it. At his side, he turned a little metal spike over in his fingers, the earring Vendel had sent. It was nearly identical to the one he'd used to kill Lessie. Eventually, footsteps on pine needles signaled someone approaching. He pulled on his cigar, giving a warm glow to the mists and revealing Milan's face. Her feminine one. She'd finished changing and was doing up the buttons on her shirt as she joined him.
You going to get some sleep?
She asked softly.
Maybe.
Last I checked, she said, humans still need it. Once in a while.
Wax pulled on his cigar, then blew out into the mists again.
Suit wants you to go back to Ellendale, I figure, Milan said. He's trying to set it up so that you'll have no choice, so far as you see it.
We're in a bad spot, Milan, Wax said. The emissary that Aradel sends to a political rally ends up murdering the host? If the outer cities weren't tense before, they will be now. At the very best, it will be a huge political embarrassment. At the worst, I've started a war.
Wind blew, rustling pine branches he couldn't see. He couldn't even see Milan. Clouds must have rolled in, blocking the starlight. Sweet, enveloping darkness.
If there is war, she said, Suit will have started it, not you.
I might be able to prevent it, Wax said. Governor Aradel needs to know, Milan. If the outer cities are going to claim assassination, use it as the brand to start a bonfire, I can't just vanish. I have to get to Elendil. That way I can claim I knew the new Saren justice system was corrupt and so I fled to safety. I can make my case in the broadsheets before news spreads. I can convince Aradel I didn't kill the woman. If I do anything else, it will look like I'm hiding.
Like I said, Milan said, he's set it up so that you have no choice, so far as you see it.
You see it differently?
I've been a lot of people, Ladrian, seen through a lot of eyes. There's always another perspective if you look hard enough.
He pulled on his cigar and held the smoke a long moment before letting it out in a slow dribble. Milan crept away. Did her kind need sleep? She'd implied they didn't, but he couldn't say for certain. Alone with his cigar, he tried to sort through what he wanted to do. Go back to Elendil as forced upon him by Suit's minions, or chase after the mystery as forced upon him by Harmony's minions. He rolled the earring in his fingers and confronted the hatred simmering inside of him. He'd never hated God before. After Lessie's supposed death the first time, he hadn't blamed Harmony. Rusts, even after Bleeder had raised the question of why Harmony hadn't helped, Wax hadn't responded with hatred. But now? Yes, that hatred was there. You could take Nox out in the roughs. You lost friends. You sometimes had to kill a man you didn't want to kill. But one thing you never did, you never betrayed a companion. Friends were too rare a privilege out in those wilds where everything seemed to want you dead. By hiding the truth from him, Harmony had stabbed him square in the back. Wax could forgive a lot of things. He wasn't sure this was one of them. His cigar eventually ran out. His questions lingered. By the time he hiked back toward their campsite, the mist was retreating for the night. He fed the horses, six of them purchased at the new Saren Bottom Terrace shipping yards, along with a full-sized stagecoach used to do runs to the southern roughs. They'd narrowly escaped New Saren. Galloping their carriage, they'd managed to descend the ramps before the police, but only after Wax had been forced to bring down a gondola line. The police hadn't given chase after that, as if realizing they didn't have the resources to hunt someone like Waxillium Dawnshot, at least not without a lot of backup. Wax still wanted to be moving. Though he was tired to the bones, he couldn't let himself, or anyone else, rest long. Just in case. As the others groggily piled into the vehicle, Milan took the reins from him and climbed up to the driver's seat. Wayne hopped into the spotter's seat beside her, and she gave him a grin.
"Where to, boss?"
she asked, turning to Wax.
"Back home?"
"No," Wax said. "We ride to Dulsing, the place Wayne and Marisi located. The direction of the building project."
"You found another perspective, I see," Milan said.
"Not yet," Wax said softly, climbing into the stagecoach. "But let's see if Harmony dares try to give me one."